It is June 25th, 11:45 a.m. This is the GNSO wrap-up session in Retiro B.
How are
I think the microphone's working.
No, it's working. Okay, so we have power on the microphones up here now, so we might as well get on with the meeting. If I could have your attention.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. Could I ask all the councillors and staff members to slowly move to their seats? We are already 4 minutes over time, and we do not have as much time as we used to because of the following schedule. So please fasten your seatbelts and put your seatbacks in an upright position. We're ready to take off.
Thanks, Volker. Thanks, everyone. Hi, welcome to the wrap-up session. We've got an hour. So is that correct? Confirming that we have an hour, one hour till 12:45. So we have 8 items on the agenda. I don't know if you've seen these on the list, but they are here in front of you in any case. So that's the 8 items. So first on the list is any feedback from the weekend session that you may have. You may want to make any points or comments about areas of improvement now, or alternatively, and you may wish to participate in filling in the survey that will be, it's not been sent out yet, I take it. It'll be sent out in due course. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. So I think, as all of you know, we do a short survey to ask for council members as well as stakeholder group and constituency input on the meetings, you know, what went well, what could have gone better, what are the topics you would like to see for the next meeting. But I think on the last survey, we actually got really few responses. So just trying to see if anyone has any suggestions on how we can get more input on that, or does that just mean that people are, in general, pleased with how we run the meetings and the topics that are being discussed?
Any comments or points about the weekend session? I mean, they were pretty dense. There was a lot going on. But if you look at it, is there anything that you would not have had on there or would have seen differently? Volker, go ahead.
This would also be very helpful with view to the upcoming new meeting schedule, as we will not have a weekend session, at least for the meeting following Marrakesh, I think it is, the B meeting, which is in the summer of next year. So basically, we will have to look at the weekend session and see what we would have to essentially take over into the rest of the sessions and what we could move into another slot, maybe an update previous to the meeting. So please, your feedback would be appreciated. If not today, on the list is fine.
Any other comments or points? Chuck, go ahead.
Thanks. Sorry for jumping in on this, but a question, Volker. Is it assumed that there will be no weekend meetings on the summer meeting next year? Or is that still an issue being considered?
Well, we have asked ICANN meeting planning staff, and they were pretty adamant in confirming that there will not be any days tacked onto the meeting structure as planned, which means that we will really have to try hard to make this work. This is, will lead to difficulties and a significant change of our current structure of meetings for that meeting. And I, as of this time, still have no idea how this will turn up, even though we have some concepts in head already. We'll just have to try and see.
I mean, I must say, from my point of view, the one thing I have experienced, and if you take a big level, you don't just consider the GNSO working sessions, there's certainly still some quite significant repetition through the course of the whole meeting. I mean, I've been to some topics or been involved in some topics which are dealt with 3 or 4 times in more or less the same way. So it'll be interesting when we're forced to work in a different way, as that summer meeting will inevitably make us do, how that changes. But let's keep. There's a number of items to cover. If they're not specific comments or issues about how we ran the weekend session, because as far as Dublin's concerned and Marrakesh, it's essentially, the next two meetings are essentially similar. So please do give feedback. And also, when those drafts of the schedules do come round, you know, any feedback you can give is always useful. So, right. So the next thing is planning for Dublin and thinking about the various issues. Of course, we flagged in the last day or two that there is going to be that council development session on the Friday. So we would really appreciate if all councillors were there on Friday, and in particular also communicating with your groups about incoming councillors and making sure they are aware as early as possible, because we've had that in the past where people said, well, I didn't know that was going to be taking place. So, Phil.
Is that the Friday before the meeting or the Friday after the meeting?
Yeah, thank you for that. It's the Friday after. It's the tomorrow day. So essentially, what the structure of the meeting, for the avoidance of doubt, is in Dublin will be GNSO weekend sessions, Saturday, Sunday, regular ICANN meeting, Monday through Thursday, Friday at the end of that week, an additional GNSO council development session. This is for councillors only. I've got Brett, and then I've got Carlos.
Thanks. Just planning for Dublin, because I'm a glutton for punishment, one of the other evenings I listened to the non-contracted party houses' interaction with the board, and I found it very enlightening to hear what other constituencies were raising at the board level. I would have loved to have had both the opportunity to talk to the other councillors about the things that were important to the registries, as well as hear from the other councillors about the things that they were raising with the board. I wonder whether we can set aside some time at our Saturday-Sunday sessions to talk to each other about the things that are important to our constituencies. Maybe we always don't know that before Constituency Day, so you know, we might want to put that later in the week now that I'm thinking about it. But I found it very helpful to me, both you know, in the work I do for my business, but also as a counselor, just to hear the concerns of others as they voice them to the board. So I think maybe that could be a productive use of our time at some point during the week to talk and listen.
Okay, thanks. Any, Carlos, you next?
Yes, about the Friday after the meeting, please be clear if it includes dinner or not. Last time in Los Angeles, we lost half of the people Friday afternoon, and only half of the group went for a very interesting dinner. So it's good to know if it goes all through all Friday or just until Friday afternoon. That's where Volker defined a multi-stakeholder model. Friday evening.
That's a good point. Okay, so thank you. I mean, this will be challenging because part of it was that it wasn't clear, but part of it is it's at the end of a long meeting and the issue of... So perhaps what we need to do is clarify whether that's something we want or not, because clearly when we did that, we did this the first time in Buenos Aires, and essentially having worked a full day on that Friday, there wasn't really an option to go home because of flights and so on, and or for whatever reason... And it turned out to be a very nice evening, a very sort of way of kind of bonding and wrapping up the thing. Marika?
It isn't Marika. So, of course, the other option is to do the dinner the evening before. But I believe we've never done that because there are already other commitments that typically exist. There's, I think, normally the closing cocktail. I think there's some other meetings that tend to happen there. But if that would work better, that is something else we could consider. I mean, the idea of the dinners is a bit of the closing of the day. So from a... meeting flow, it makes more sense, but if people believe that it's adding really a lot of time because you can't fly out in the evening and only the next morning, maybe that's something to consider as an alternative.
Okay, so we'll have to work on the planning. Glenn just handed me a note which is quite significant in terms of the planning, in that it looks like ICANN is going to seek to have all supported travelers confirmed by the 13th of July. Quite how this is going to square with... I suppose we don't support incoming councillors, do we, though? Do we support incoming councillors? So, but that means that technically the elections for incoming councillors need to be resolved by the 13th of July. That doesn't seem realistic. It's not going to happen, is it?
It's absolutely not possible for the registrars, at least.
So we'll have to work at that one. That's going to be... Heather, go ahead.
Sorry, Jonathan.
Sorry. Hang on, just a moment. Before you come in, we've got a little bit of disorganization. If I could ask you all to log into the Adobe Connect room, it's a lot easier to manage the queue and it's fairer then. So unless you absolutely can't do that, I'd like you all in there because it's just, otherwise I'm knocking people out of the queue or putting things out of order. So Glenn, did you want to come in on this travel point?
Yes, I realize that it is going to, the elections are going to impact this, but I think that there are some constituencies, some stakeholder groups that know already who their chosen travelers will be. So as many people as possible, please, you know, send me your names. I'll send out a note.
Yeah, so for this kind of thing, I think it's very useful to simply make sure we use the mailing list. This is perfect stuff for the mailing list, just sending out a call and letting us know the facts on the mailing list, but point taken. Okay, so I do acknowledge, James, you had your hand up in the... You down? Heather? You done? Okay. I think that covers item two, so we'll move on to item three. So we need to come up with, together with the groups, we need plans for the council chair and co-chair elections. For those of you who don't know, I'm term limited, so I won't be standing as a registry stakeholder group councillor. I won't be available to be on the council from October, so we'll need a new chair and co-chairs to be either re-elected or new co-chairs to be elected. Marika, can you talk a little bit to the process of that, just to give a sense of how things work?
Yeah, I'll maybe just talk about the nominations for that. I think, you know, it's all spelled out, how the actual election is run in the GNSO operating procedures. But basically, each house nominates one candidate for the GNSO council chair position, and each house determines themselves how to run that nomination process. It's important to know that a candidate for GNSO council chair does not need to be a member of a house, but must be a member of the GNSO council. So basically, if anyone running for that position has to be a member of the GNSO council. And similarly, there's also, of course, the vice chair selection, which also happens. Each house nominates a vice chair from their respective house, but the chair of the GNSO may not be a member of the same stakeholder group of either of the vice chairs. So that's also something to be factored in. I don't know if you want to go in further detail in the process, or maybe I briefly mention the possible timeline for that. Let me just look that up, because Glenn basically looked back at previous elections that we've held, and on the basis of that, she has suggested some dates that the council may want to consider as their timeline. I think it needs to be formally approved, so it would be something that would be on the next council agenda then. But her suggestions are that 25th of September could be the deadline for nominations, followed by the 2nd of October, a candidate statement. Then the 17th and 18th of October, that's actually at the Dublin meeting, that would be Q&A with candidates, followed then on the 21st of October, Wednesday meeting, the actual election, which is done by the new council as they are seated.
So thanks, Marika. So just to be clear, that's an indicative timetable. We haven't agreed yet that is the timetable, but that gives you a feel for the way things will work. Let me go to James, and then I'll make some remarks of my own. James?
Thank you, and thanks, Marika, for that timetable. It makes sense working backwards from that to build somewhat of a skeletal timeline. My question was, and I think that we touched on this yesterday, and I missed where we came down, was that there's some question of whether or not incoming councillors who may not be known to us yet are eligible for these positions, chair and vice chair. And that, I think that if I'm remembering correctly, they are technically eligible, but we would require us to name a interim chair or interim vice chair for some time being until they were seated, and that vote could conclude at the meeting following the Dublin meeting. And that it was also, I think some folks who have been through that once before mentioned that was very disruptive to continuity. So my question is, did we ever settle that question? And if not, does that indicate that the next people we are talking about, let's just beat around the bush here, the people that we're talking about are sitting at this table now. We just don't know who or what, right? Because okay, they're not the unknown new counselors that we don't know yet.
Let's help with that. James, do you want to comment on that, Marika?
Yes, it is, Marika. So we actually went back to Icann Legal to get their assistance with interpreting the rules as they're currently written, and their read of it is indeed that a candidate has to be a member of the council. So a candidate or someone coming onto the council is not a council member yet. So that person wouldn't qualify for an election that would be held on that Wednesday in Dublin. However, should that election fail to find a chair based on the voting thresholds that need to be met, so basically if there's no agreement on the people that may have been candidates or there is maybe no candidate, the vice chairs would at that moment step in and a new election would be organized immediately following that. And of course, at that moment, all the members that are on the council are eligible to put themselves forward as candidates.
So, at its simplest, the candidates on the slate, or potentially on the slate, are everyone around this table, all existing councillors, who are not term limited beyond October. That's at face value. There are two wrinkles to that. I think I understand that there to be two wrinkles. One is, should one of the stakeholder groups or constituencies change their candidate ahead of the nomination period, change their representatives on the council ahead of their nomination period, so in principle that there could be the introduction of a new councillor and chair candidate ahead of that. That's one. And the second is, as Marika described, which is, should we fail to produce a result for whatever reason, for example, no one on the slate, or failure of to reach the thresholds to elect whoever was on the slate, for whatever reason, we'd then go into that post-new council phase when we'd call for a second round of nominations, in which case the slate is then comprises those newly added councillors. I'll stop there and note, I thought I had a hand up from someone else. James, your hand is an old hand. I don't see any other hands at the... Okay. So just a couple of comments from my perspective, from the chair, if you like. I think there's really two things I would encourage you to think about and to communicate with your groups on. The first of all is that, first and foremost, regardless of the House or the stakeholder group or the constituency, what you really should be looking for in thinking about nominations is someone who has the qualities and qualifications in order to be able to do the job. That's the first thing. What are their competencies? Are you satisfied that the person you are nominating, whether they come from the House that you are not in or one of the other stakeholder groups that you are not in, or they come from your stakeholder group or constituency, what are their capabilities and qualities in terms of previous chairing experience, knowledge of GNSO and GNSO-related matters, knowledge of domain names, and so on and so on. That's one. And then the second is their ability to commit the requisite time. And, you know, you could argue about what the requisite time is, but I think a reasonable assessment should be that you should assess it as around 50% of a normal working job. So it's significant, right? This is not a quick 10% that you might be able to do after hours. This is preparation, follow-ups. When you add it up, and I went through this in a mechanical exercise at some point and checked, when you add up all of the weeks and the meetings and the prep for the meetings and the post-analysis and the letter writing and all the rest of it that you add up. So those would be my two points. Is the candidate qualified and are they able to dedicate the time? That's really the two questions I'd put to anyone who's thinking of talking with their groups about nominating a candidate for the role. Michele, your hand was up, and I'm sorry I missed it earlier.
Don't go beeping at me, Jonathan, please. Michele Nane, for the record. I had put my hand up earlier, took it down, I put it back up again, so you didn't actually miss it. Marika's guidelines on the timing, I think, is very, very important. It would be great if she could circulate that to us in some kind of simple and easy-to-digest form. The timing around the rollover of councillors, depending on which stakeholder group or constituency they're from, is a little bit confusing. I mean, it's this thing where you're potentially ending up where you're asked to provide details for people who you don't know about yet. And I felt sorry for James while trying to explain that situation. It was almost a Donald Rumsfeld moment. The rollover of councillors, I think it's important. I mean, what you were saying, Jonathan, is key. This group makes some very important decisions, and you need to make sure that the representatives that we put on here across the board are the best people and the ones who can commit to that. I mean, it's of no value to anybody if people are just turning up, not committing properly, not engaging effectively, because we end up with bad decisions which make us all unhappy in the long run. Now, obviously, of course, you know, if it benefits the registrars, we're not going to complain. No, but I'm being facetious. But I just don't think it's... I think it's something that people tend to overlook. I mean, there have been issues, I think, in many groups across the entire wide spectrum of the ICANN community in the last 6 or 7 years, where some people have used various bodies, various positions, as just being a way to go to meetings. And, you know, that has a bad impact on the people that I know come here and work their damn asses off. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Chuck?
Chuck Gomes. One of the issues that often comes up in talking about a chair is the need for neutrality, as everybody knows. And to my knowledge, I don't think we've ever had a chair in the council that has used that inappropriately. And in fact, in my opinion, some of our chairs have been almost too neutral. They never share a personal opinion. And I think it's okay to share a personal opinion as long as you say what you're doing or if you're representing your constituency. I found when I was chair that there were times when our reps either weren't aware of an issue from the stakeholder group or maybe weren't present, where I would take off my chair hat and share that. And I think you need to do that because you want your constituency or stakeholder group to be represented. So I think it's really important that people that may be considering being a candidate, that you realize that you do have to be neutral, but it doesn't restrict you as long as you're clear what hat you're wearing in terms of representing your constituency. Now, I know Jonathan does a real good job of trying to get the other reps on the council to take care of the register things, and I think I did the same thing. If they were there, I'd rather they did it when I was chair. But nobody should think that you can't say anything personal or you can't say anything that for your stakeholder group if you need to, as long as you let them know, hey, I'm taking my chair hat off for a moment. So, and then the other comment I wanted to make, I've always felt that it doesn't matter because you're going to be functioning neutrally, it doesn't matter what house you come from. If somebody has the right skills, like Jonathan said, and can commit the time, and I totally support your estimate there in terms of the time commitment. I'm sure Avery would too, because I know how hard she worked. then it doesn't matter what house. You know, if somebody ever violated the neutrality role there, you're not going to let them stay as chair, right? So I hope we don't get too hung up on houses. I think it'd be nice if a candidate came from the non-contracted party house because there hasn't been one from there. But in the end, what you want is somebody that can do the leadership, will do the preparation, and can commit the time. Thanks.
Thanks, Chuck. And you know, to your point on the time, it's difficult to estimate it, and it certainly, and if you let it, it could take all the time that you had. It's a question of trying to put some kind of realistic parameters on it. And if people are measuring whether or not they have the time or are able to persuade their employer or funder that they can give the time, I think that's a useful benchmark to call it the 50%. But make no mistake, it could take more. Well, that's probably enough said on that unless anyone else wants to add anything. Michele, you've got an old hand, I think, but just, all right. Let's move on then, and we'll have to work through that. That's going to hit us fairly hard, that figuring all of that out over the next few months. GAC communique, I think I had a brief skim over the GAC communique last night. It looks like it's pretty substantial, and so there may well be some policy implications of that that we want to respond to. So hopefully this has give us a chance to do that. And one of the things is that's encouraging about it, in the GAC communique, they reference that we intend to do this, and they are receptive to it. So, Volker, I don't know if you'd like to make any other comments in that respect.
I personally haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure that it will make entertaining reading on the flight back, and I think we should get started next week at the earliest convenience to analyze and put it in the format that we have developed, and then determine what response, which should be forthcoming from us to the board.
So let me help you a bit further then with a deadline. It feels to me like the logical thing to do here is to process this, work it out, and sign it off at the first council meeting post this meeting. I mean, that seems to be the logical thing to do. Because the minute it drags on longer than that, it loses its value. And so I would like it to be, the deadline is that it's on the agenda for the next council meeting, and hopefully you, Volker, and we can accept that.
Well, thank you for that deadline. That's certainly appreciated. And I think we have a lot of discussing to do on the list once the first draft is out. I will inform you about the first draft and then hope we'll get a spirited discussion that allows us to dig in deeper.
Oops. James, go ahead.
Thank you. I read the communicator, at least skimmed through it, and I didn't see anything. At least my question is, under this process, do we respond to, is the entire communique fair game, or is it only those things where it says the GAC advises the board as GAC advice? Because that section is fairly light this time around, and I don't know if that was the intention that we had when we first took up this idea, is that we would be responding to GAC advice that we felt had policy implications. But if they're just making observations and thanking different working groups and supporting different, I mean, can we just plus one the communique? And what's our process here?
Yes, I think you raise an interesting point. Originally, as it was conceived, it would very much only address the actual advice given to the board. However, we might add these points in as well if, for example, the GAC commends us on certain policy activities or supports certain policy activities, we may want to thank them for that support. That probably would go a long way of furthering our cooperation and integration of our efforts.
And I left my hand up so I could come back to say I volunteer to help.
Thanks, James. I mean, so to put, I must say, the one thing I would say is I don't think we have to produce a response. I think what we are committing as a council to do, nothing to do with what we committed to anyone else, is to review the communique for policy implications and decide whether or not we want to make a response. We shouldn't feel obliged to make a sort of soft or fluffy response if we don't feel it. It should be really about something effective if we need it. Carlos?
Sorry, I want to volunteer too.
Thank you. So you've got Volk, you've got James and Carlos with you. Any other comments or questions on this item?
I'd like to volunteer to help as well.
Great. Thank you, David. Okay, let's move on to item five then. Ah, Michele's in there.
Sorry, Michele, for the record. Now, just in terms of the interaction between the GAC and the rest of the GNSO, I mean, it's interesting to see that they now have the public safety working group who've been doing the rounds this week here at ICANN 53. And it seems that they are looking at engaging with GNSO PDP working groups on a more kind of ongoing, consistent basis rather than doing so via the GAC directly. But I just wonder if if people here have set reasonable expectations on those interactions. So it's very clear from the conversations I've had with them that they won't be able to formally join working groups and get involved on a day-to-day basis, but would be more open to coming in when their specific expertise or advice or input is required. Thanks.
Yeah, David wants to respond to that.
I've certainly advised them to look at the work being done in the GAC GNSO coordination group about how GAC members and government members can participate in the GNSO working group process without fully joining a working group.
Mason?
Yeah, I was unaware that they were taking that much of an activist role, but if there's an area where I can help out to assist that in the liaison role, then I'm happy to do that.
This is Michael, just coming back briefly. Thanks, Mason. I mean, the thing I suppose is from the registrar perspective, the several work groups and themes which impact us directly, where the InfoSec, public safety, law enforcement interaction historically was quite, looking for a word, somebody feed me a word quickly, conflictual, wasn't particularly helpful or progressive from either party. It seems that I think we're moving beyond that. But I think also as well they've tried to engage in different ways over the years and maybe now they're finally finding the right way to do so.
Yeah, I'm sure that's partly true. We've done lots of work to try and help them find that way as well. To be clear, they're not just finding it all on their own. Stephanie?
Sorry, couldn't find the mic. Stephanie Perrin for the record. Thank you. I was going to raise this, so I'm glad McKaylee's raised it. Is there any way we could get Mason to, what's the right word, participate or listen to that advisory committee? Because it does seem to me a bit odd that that's only an, I understand the government people, but it's only an advisory committee to the GAC. So to the extent that they are beefing up their participation as a formal advisory committee to the GAC, if they're not going to come and liaise with us and make their concerns known, it may actually be more difficult to anticipate what's coming at us in the way of advice from the GAC. If you follow my, and I'm speaking, obviously one of my key issues is privacy, and that, and there's always some tension with law enforcement about that.
I'm trying to think, they spoke with us. I'm just thinking before going on the queue. They spoke with us at the registry stakeholder group, and we did talk with them. Maybe someone else can remind me from. I remember asking them something. I don't remember what I talked to them about. But let's go to Avery, and then I see Amar has got his hand up after that. Avery.
This is Avery speaking. I just wanted to point out that in another one of their groups that they've started in terms of the human rights and international law one, they have, and I'm not sure about lists yet, but they certainly made their meetings open to us. So perhaps, you know, they will take a an open view on it, and that would be a really good thing to ask in terms of their, right. In terms of sort of any of their advisory to the advisory committee committees.
Thanks, Avery. Amar, come in.
Thanks, Jonathan. This is Amar. I'm not exactly sure if I understand the concern correctly, but if I don't, please do point me in the right direction. But I think it would be helpful to differentiate between the participation of GAC members in GNSO working groups and what GAC advice may be to the board or even GAC input to a PDP. Via, for example, the processes that we are working on in the GAC GNSO consultative group. There have been GAC members on GNSO working groups before, but I think that they've pretty much made it clear that they do not represent the GAC in any way, but they're sort of joining in their individual capacities. For the GAC to provide formal input into the GNSO process, this is what the group comprising of GNSO counselors and GAC members is working on, and Mason's helping us in that group as well. And of course, GAC advice to the board represents the GAC position, but I think it would be helpful to just sort of make the distinction between what those are and what may be perceived as GAC participation in working groups on an ongoing basis. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Thanks, Amma, for raising those. So a couple of things, really. One, when Stephanie raised her point about how Mason might be able to help, and you've now highlighted the consultation group, I think we need to be really clear here what our expectations are. First of all, Mason's role is to be a GNSO liaison to the GAC, not the other way around. He can help us with information coming the other way around, and no doubt he will. But the primary purpose is for us to inform the GAC what's going on in the GNSO. So they, in a sense, can't say, we never knew, we were not informed, we had no idea this was going on. And that's one output from the whole work of the consultation group. And the job of that is to make sure that the GAC, or the ultimate outcome of that, is to make sure the GAC is involved in the policy development process at an earliest possible stage. Now, how they then choose to get involved, well, there is, as Amma highlights, there's a number of mechanisms coming out of the work of that consultation group, and we probably need to pick up the work of that consultation group again post this meeting. And so I can see that the final point is this concern about these working groups within the GAC that are there to inform the GAC. Well, I think the job we've got to do is try and draw them out of themselves and make sure that, and again, Amma's correct. I think the chance of us getting the GAC to participate in a working group is very limited. But getting GAC members to involve themselves and roll up their sleeves, I think there's a greater chance. And in addition, as I said a moment ago, we've got these mechanisms we're building for early engagement. So I'm moderately positive, but I think it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. But let's not lean entirely on Mason to achieve that, because there's good reason for it, for me being cautious about that, because I think it's not that I don't think Mason could do a good job of it, but if they start leaning on that liaison role, it gives them an excuse to remain distant, whereas the whole point is to engage the GAC in the policy development process as early as possible in whatever way is possible and to integrate that. Heather.
Thank you, Jonathan. Heather Forrest. I wanted to offer 2 cents on this, I suppose, because I've become the poster child for this issue of communicating with the GAC in the CWG that Carlos and I co-chair. And I suppose one of the challenges that we have, it's not simply having GAC members participate in working groups. It's where we have GAC working groups themselves working in overlapping areas. And let's say GAC members communicating back to us individually or in the capacity of the GNSO, understanding the word cooperation or collaboration very different. In the experience of our CWG, that has meant that the GAC sends one member or indeed one member participates on their own volition, and nothing comes back from the GAC working group that's working on the same area. So I suppose to the extent that we can somehow encourage a more expansive understanding of collaborate, bearing in mind, of course, that we're dealing with the GAC, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. So I think we should formally record, if we haven't already on the action list, that item that Byron and I agreed to do, which is to now reach out to, and that's part of the work of the consultation group, is to ensure that there is regular interaction between the chairs of the two groups. So this is clearly an agenda item that we can work with, and Mason will be part of that group as well to make sure that's all joined up. So that's an action on Byron and myself as chairs of the respectively of the CCNSO and the GNSO councils to engage with the GAC chairs and vice chairs on effective interaction. Okay. Moving on then, ICANN meeting membership in working groups. Okay, well, I mean, this is a difficult one. This is both important and motherhood and apple pie at the same time. This one on membership in working groups. We need sufficient participation, representation, and the example here is given that we don't have necessarily members from all groups participating in SCI. Can you confirm which, if any, groups are not participating in the SCI at the moment?
So this is Rick. I think especially the contracted parties haven't been very active, and I don't know if it's a result of the members have been appointed that they are no longer available or lack of interest, but I think if we've looked over the records from the last meetings, the other groups I think have been participating very well, but contracted parties have been underrepresented or not represented in many of the meetings.
Okay, James?
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Marika. And my question was just, I think you kind of teed it up very nicely, is who are the, do you have the membership handy, and can you tell us who are the contracted party representatives on the SCI? Because when I left the SCI, I think, I'm not sure that someone came and took my place, and I was just curious as if...
Yeah, and this is Rick. I think that's one of the issues. For example, for the registrars, we have Jennifer Standiford as a primary member, but the alternate member is a position that still needs to be filled. And for the registry stakeholder group, it's Ken Stubbs and Ray Fassett. And there's some other positions that we know we need to go back, or we have probably have already gone back to the different groups to fill those slots. Another one is the nominating committee appointee. We still need a primary member for that. I think MPOC is still missing an alternate, and so is the business constituency. But I know staff is following up on that with the different groups, but it would also be helpful if those in the rooms here can also work with us on that.
Yeah, so I think what would be helpful to us as the council is to have a reminder of who's in that group, and then we can go back to our respective groups and say, are you still active and or willing to be active? Marika.
Yeah, and this is maybe not to open a whole different conversation, but as we start thinking ahead about the GNSO review and potential implementation and potential role that the SCI may play in that, you know, something you may want to think about as well, because I think part of the challenge, for example, that's, you know, particularly specific for the SCI is that it works with a member and alternate system. It's not an open working group, so you don't have a bigger pool of people, so that makes it also harder. You know, you only have two people that can potentially show up. So if, you know, one doesn't show up, it's you're already 50% down, and if the two don't show up, you have no representation at all from that group. So I think as the GNSO starts thinking the path ahead, for example, in a GNSO review, I think one of the questions to ask there is, you know, is the SCI the vehicle to work on implementation? Should that be another vehicle, or should the SCI maybe be reconfigured to deal with, you know, the challenges we currently see where there's not enough representation from certain groups in the discussions?
Thanks, Marika. Michele, did you want to speak? I've got Thomas after you.
Yes, thanks for the record, Michele. This week I'm pretending to be a GNSO councillor. It's great, which is great fun. But the rest of the time I'm still chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. And one of the things that we've been discussing in the SOAC leadership calls and in the meetings we have with ICANN staff and talking to Chris Gift and various others is around the, you know, management of the different constituencies and stakeholder groups. And at the moment, for example, it's impossible for me as chair of the registrars to go to a single place and get a list of every single working group that's currently active and to see quickly and easily which ones have registrar representation and who they are. And I'm sure other groups are in a similar position. I'm not trying to punt a massive amount of work onto Marika and her team, but it's a bit hard for us as well just to see at times where those gaps are. Now, in the interaction that we as a stakeholder group we had with the board the other day, one of the things that somebody raised was that within the space there's an awful habit for all of us to try and be involved in absolutely everything, and maybe there is a There are certain groups, certain initiatives where not every single stakeholder group needs to be involved. That maybe in some cases we need to be a bit more careful about which ones we're engaged on, because ultimately when you look around the room, it's nearly always the same people. I mean, we don't have a massive influx of new blood. And I know that some of these work groups, the workload involved is massive. You've got regularly scheduled calls, you've got active mailing lists, you've got, in some cases, huge amounts of material. So just, you know, just be quite careful about how you frame this, because there is an issue there around the workload, which we cannot ignore. I'm not saying that we should ignore it, I'm not saying I can fix it either, but just we have to try and get that balance right, Jonathan. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Michele. I just remind everyone there's 10 minutes, and I'm sure you all want to understand how ICANN is going to appoint its next CEO, which is the session that follows immediately after this. So 10 minutes. Marika.
Yeah, this is just to, on Michele's questions, for each working group on the wiki page, there is a list where all members are listed, including their affiliation, as well as links to SOIs, and it also includes their attendance sheets. So we do keep attendance for each working group so people can see as well. If you have appointed members or people representing you in certain working groups, you can also see if they're actually, you know, if they're showing up for calls, which of course doesn't mean that's the only way they participate, but it's one of the information that we track for working groups. So it's maybe not all in one page, but it shouldn't be too difficult to find, and I'm happy to circulate the links for those if that is helpful.
Thanks, Marika. All right, so Thomas, sorry.
Yeah, just very briefly. I think the idea of such an overview is an excellent one, because when we sat in the SEI, it wasn't easy to find out who actually was primary or second or alternate for the respective groups. Having said that, I'm currently the alternate NOMCOM representative on the SEI. My term is over in Dublin, so we might find ourselves without a primary and an alternate. Likewise, I'm going to empty my chair as a CCNSO council liaison in Dublin. And speaking of that, I'm just finding out this is my last wrap-up session with the council, because we will be kicked out of our seats during the public session, right? So I think there's some succession planning.
Thomas, don't say kicked out. Removed forcefully.
Gently unglued from the... so I think there's some succession planning to be at least thought about between today and Dublin.
Thanks, Thomas. And following your gentle ungluing, you will still be welcome at the sessions, I'm sure. And I can imagine you and I will become backbenchers. all right. So I think we've done that point. Meeting strategy, communicate. Next point, six. Meeting strategy, communicate to the board. Consider how scheduling of meetings can be improved. I've certainly had some off the record or sort of corridor conversations about this issue. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say about this? Marika, go ahead.
I think it's both, you know, looking at how ICANN meetings are scheduled, you know, across the board for all groups, but also I think within the GNSO. I think we've seen that there are more and more meetings that are being organized by different groups that are not necessarily directly linked to, you know, GNSO policy development activities, which, you know, that's not an issue, but we've seen that they've then started as well being scheduled directly opposite GNSO policy activities. So the question is that something where, you know, some more coordination should take place at the GNSO level? Program committee, so people see what kind of meetings are being scheduled in stakeholder groups and constituencies, how we can make sure that they don't directly interfere with, you know, the core responsibilities of the council and the GNSO to focus on policy development. So that's one of the questions we have from staff. Is there something that we can do to enhance that coordination and avoid, at least at the GNSO level, you know, direct conflict or competition between meetings that are organized within this community?
I'll just respond to that, because I think there's two points here that need to be done. And so if this isn't already captured as an action item, it should be, and this is what the point about communicating to the board is. One, we intend to communicate to the board, and this is essentially a proposal that I hope you won't disagree with, to say that we are working on our plans for the meeting B, and we would like to interact with the board and understand what their plans are. Because personally, and I've heard others express this, some of us find it problematic, at least, that the board seems to exist in a parallel universe to the policy development process. And it's almost a bit like we've got the issue with the GAC, where we then bump into them late in the game, whereas actually it would be more effective if we could interact. So there's a question over meeting B, when it's that particularly it's an obvious point. And I think we could easily append into that letter or add into that letter just a comment for reference of the board about a concern over scheduling, and at least it would get it at the highest level, and then they can come back to us
So that's my suggestion, that we deal with them, that we write dealing with both, letting them know what our plans are, how we're doing our plans for meeting B, asking what their plans are for meeting B, and indicating a concern about scheduling, and then we can always work with staff separately to that. Heather.
Thank you, Jonathan. Heather Forrest. Two points. I'll make them briefly. The first one is on the practicalities, perhaps not communicating to the board, but in relation to meeting strategy, I was the one that raised this issue most vociferously over the weekend, given that in the IPC schedule we'd identified some 30-odd conflicts. And in the spirit of not just complaining about problems and trying to propose a solution, I have my sort of university exam scheduling hat on. Would it be helpful if each constituency or stakeholder group identified in advance, let's say, things that simply cannot clash? So for example, IPC meeting cannot clash with this working group, this working group, this working group. Is that helpful from us to staff in terms of putting together the meeting schedule? I'll leave that. Second point being, in relation to this meeting B, one thing that plagues me is it seems to be the inherent idea behind meeting B is that one would want to spend or need to spend all one's time with their particular SO or AC in meeting B. And it doesn't at all acknowledge the fact that when we all come here, yes, we attend the GNSO meetings, but we also dash in and out of GAC meetings and ALAC meetings and this sort of thing. And that troubles me. To the extent that we try and cram all of our GNSO activities into the few days of meeting B, when do we have time to go to other SOs and ACs? Thank you.
So hopefully thinking about meeting B and the work that we are doing not only in the GNSO but in coordination with other stakeholder group, with other SOs and ACs, will mean that there's some thought given to that. I'm not saying the answer is that. I should say as well that I in terms of the clashes, your previous point, I've certainly raised it in a one-to-one. I had a brief discussion with Sally Costerton, and I think there may well be some other suggestions as to how we deal. I think there's an awareness. I got the sense that this wasn't a surprise, and there is an awareness, and they're going to try and do something about issues around clashes and so on. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. So I think Volker already gave you a brief update on the meeting that we had with some of the other SOs, ACs, like a formal meeting to talk about scheduling. And I think a lot of the other groups have only just started thinking about it. But one, you know, feedback that we already received, for example, from the CCNSO, that their question is basically, if there's a B meeting that is only 4 days where we, you know, it's very different from what we usually do, we may not meet at all. So I think that is another consideration to factor in, where certain groups may say, well, for us, there is no purpose in coming if it's only 4 days. We don't think it will be attractive enough. If we can, the thing from them, the perspective is, if we cannot run Tech Day, which is the main attraction for many CCTLDs, you know, we're not going to convince them to come to a location that's likely in, you know, South America or Africa, which may not be the easiest places to get to. So we're not going to be able to convince them to come, so we may not have any meetings. And that, of course, then puts into question as well if the meeting is also focused on cross-community engagement and interaction, you know, thinking of cross-community working groups, can you actually then have your meetings if certain parts of the community actually decide not to come at all? So I think it's very important to have continued conversation as well with the other groups to really decide what is feasible at those meetings and what can we achieve, and is it indeed achieving the purpose that it originally had in mind.
Donna, go ahead, and then I don't know, Falk, if you want to say anything about the work of that meeting group yesterday. Did you? Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, of course, yeah. Okay,
thanks.
Donna, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Donna Austin. So to the point with meeting B, the idea was that a lot of the conflict in the schedule should be removed, the idea being that there would be more sessions where everybody was in one room to discuss a policy issue, so you actually get that interaction. And we did, when we put forward the proposal, one of the outstanding items was we needed staff to come forward to actually show us how practically that would happen. And I think now that the different constituent group constituency groups are starting to think about this, that may help to some extent in trying to manage that. But the idea was with Meeting B that you would spend more time in the room with everyone talking about a specific topic or a policy issue than you would sitting in your own constituency discussing that topic. So it was supposed to be provide more opportunities for engagement across the communities rather than continuing to do business the way we do it now.
Okay, thanks for that sort of insight into the thinking behind it. So that hopefully gives a rounded perspective on things. We're at the end of our time, so I think we should use that to call a stop to that topic, but it's clear there's some ongoing work there. Under item 7, we really just there's a number of public comment forums that may be of interest to the GNSO, and there's a couple highlighted there. Most obviously, the GNSO review. I expect the groups will comment. The question will be for us whether is there a reply period, or there's no reply period on these public comments nowadays, are there? James, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. And I had a question about that. And maybe staff can just help me what comes next with the GNSO review. It goes through its public comment, and then it goes to the board, and then that's it, right? It's finished. It's not coming back to us.
So after the public comment, this is Mary for the record, after the public comment is over, then the Westlake team prepares its final report, and that, I think, it does not go for public comment. It goes to the Structural Improvements Committee of the board.
Okay, thank you. And then just as a follow-up, if that requires any structural changes, for example, to the bylaws, then is that process kicked off separately, or is this just folded in as a function of this effort? I mean, I don't know that is part of what they're discussing.
I think the way it works is that the report would contain a number of recommendations. The board committee would look at that and say, well, this is what we adopt, GNSO, go and implement it. So that would kick off, like I think last time, GNSO will then need to think, okay, how are we going to do that implementation? What kind of mechanism do we use for that? But that implementation would then map out what requires bylaw changes, what would require change to operating procedures, what are some programs we may need to develop or implement to meet those requirements. And I think there's already conversations ongoing as well with the GNSO working party to identify what programs are actually already on the way that could be part of that implementation plan, so where we can already demonstrate that there are already certain things we're doing to achieve the goals that they've set out in their report.
So thank you, Marika. I'm now a lot smarter on this than I was 45 seconds ago. I just want to point out to the council that if it, in fact, does result in the board and the Structural Improvements Committee sending us a number of implementation, a bunch of implementation work, particularly if it involves reforming our council operating procedures or our own bylaws, that could come in conjunction with changes that would be associated with the accountability efforts that are tied along, could be some sort of an empowered SOAC or empowered delegate model. And all of these things could just kind of coincidentally all converge on the same 4 to 6 month period sometime in the middle of the next year. So it's just something I think that we should be aware of in terms of when we're discussing workload and all the things that are on our horizon, that all these things could, all these balls could drop at the same moment.
Yeah, and that goes to Marika's earlier point about thinking about the future role of the SCI on how we manage and handle this sort of implementation. I think it's timely that Marika gets the last word before we call this a wrap.
Just very briefly, this is Marika. I don't think that you can tie those two things, bylaw changes of the CCWG, to this effort, because I think the GNSO review will be on a longer track than I think the CCWG is moving at. But of course, if at any point there needs to be, there's a way to synchronize the implementation of that can be done. But looking at the previous GNSO review effort, I think implementation took quite a bit of time to get that all right.
Yeah, we just finished, and it was time to start the review again, if I remember.
All right, on that happy note, I think we'll thank you all for participation in the meeting. Hope you enjoy the last few sessions of this meeting, and please do be active on in between the main meetings. We really need everyone to roll up their sleeves and participate and actively contribute as much as possible. Thanks, everyone. See you later this afternoon and, of course, in person in Dublin.